Welcome into the Saturday Show, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. The gang is back together. Michelle Bodkin back from her travels and a little bit of an eventful trip to Spokane, Michelle.
Yeah. Not the note I was expecting to end that trip on.
No.
You usually, you know, you're a little sad and bummed because you didn't advance.
Mm-hmm.
And those emotions were a little more intense due to some racial harassment that came about. So.
Yeah, no bueno. We can probably dig into that a little bit later on. But geez, just crazy because you don't anticipate that ever being a storyline, honestly. And hey, things happen.
Things do happen.
But,
and that happens.
Yeah.
And I think that was, if we can say anything about that situation, I think that was a very important reminder that these things still do happen.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you still don't expect that to be the answer you get.
No, you never do. We'll dig into that a little bit later on. But let's get today's show started as we typically do. You got a highlight of the week for us.
I will go with the men's NIT game on Wednesday.
I
thought that was a really cool situation with Davon breaking that record. Of course, Brandon Carlson kind of getting his last flowers for real this time in the Huntsman Center.
Sure.
I thought that whole entire moment was really cool. And I was happy to be a part of that.
We're going to dig into that here in a moment. The highlight of my week, Michelle, is I have hit my annual high water mark with baseball. What I mean by that is we had opening day, and that's my high water mark for the season. The rest of the baseball season, it's nothing against baseball. Let me be very clear about this. I struggle mightily to watch baseball on TV. I can watch it in person. I can go to a Bees game. I can go to an MLB game and have the time of my life. It's one of my favorite things to do. I cannot watch it on TV. I watch it because it's tradition. It's opening day. But the rest of the season, Michelle, I am not going to be actively watching a ton of baseball. It may be on in the background, but it is not going to be on in terms of like, I need to watch this MLB matchup. That's just not my style. So yeah, my highlight of the week, it was opening day, and I hit my high water mark with how much baseball I will probably be actively consuming, at least for months.
I mean, that's fair. For me, I agree with you. Baseball, softball, soccer, though, those are all sports that are so much better in person than they are on TV. I would never choose to just sit down and watch any of those games on TV.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's that may offend some of the baseball purists in our audience, but
sorry,
that's just where I stand. Like, I trust me, I am the biggest proponent of getting MLB baseball to Salt Lake City, because if they do that, I will be at an abnormal amount of games.
I would definitely try and hit a game or two for sure. Like I said, I there is nothing better, in my opinion, than like sitting in any kind of stadium, ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
Soccer pitch, football field, when the weather is perfect and like just chilling, having a good time, drinking some drinks, eating some eats, and watching some sports.
Yep. No, it's the dream right there. All right. So let's talk some more basketball here for a moment. You kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier on. You were at that NIT matchup on Wednesday. The Utes, the running Utes, still rolling. They are headed to Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I wish this was at Madison Square Garden still. The NIT for years, decades.
Yes.
Semifinals and the final were at Madison Square Garden. Three years back, they announced that they were, due to whatever situation happened, they were moving it around. They moved it to the Orleans Arena in Las Vegas the last 2 years, which is a decision, to be sure.
A choice, yes.
So they're going to Hinkle Fieldhouse, which I think just in terms of history, it's a pretty good option.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is Utah is still playing basketball. They're outside of the Utah Jazz, they're the only hoops team here locally that has their season still going. Give me your sense, though. They had, I thought, a dominant showing against VCU. And it sets them up well here. They head to Indianapolis for the semifinal. But where do you stand on all this?
Yeah, you know, this is going to be an interesting one to watch.
Yeah.
I feel like Utah is playing some of their best basketball of the season. I thought that Iowa game was really good, too.
Yeah.
And it felt like it kind of fed into the game against VCU. You know, so now we'll see, does that feed into how they play against Indiana State, who has also been cooking in this tournament and was obviously a fringe NCAA team. So I think it provides an interesting matchup. I think this is going to be the biggest challenge they've faced mm-hmm. in this NIT tournament. But, you know, there's also the question of they have not done terribly great away.
Well, sure, and that's a huge question.
And that's, you know, we've seen them, you know, cook at home several times, and we're like, okay, yes, they finally like got over the hump. They're gonna take this on the road with mm-hmm. them this time, and then it doesn't happen. So is it just gonna be more of the same, or is there something that's just clicking now that has not clicked with them before? I will say it seems like they're enjoying themselves maybe a little bit more than they were kind of in that stretch of the season where they were having the issues on the road. I get the sense that they really don't want this to end until it absolutely has to end. So, I mean, that could play in and be a factor, but we'll just have to tune in on Tuesday and see. It'll be interesting.
Okay, and there's this ongoing back and forth between the fan bases on social media. Like, was a deep run in the NIT worth more than a first-round exit in the NCAA tournament? Okay, let's be real. Every college basketball team wants to be in the Big Dance. They want to be in the NCAA tournament.
Totally.
My philosophy, though, is if you're going to get into a postseason event, go win the dang thing.
Yeah.
That's got to be your mentality. I don't care what it is. CBI, CIT, these other ones that are out there.
Right.
NIT, NCAA. Your whole mentality is to go win. And keep winning until, as you mentioned, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
You're cutting down the nets, you're having a good time celebrating, or, yeah, you lose. So you can say what you will about Utah. They're still playing basketball. They're still worth watching. And you mentioned, I'm kind of getting the sense what you kind of sense is that they're having more fun right now. Mm-hmm. I think that they're like, hey, we're playing with house money at this point. It's the postseason. It's the final run for guys like Brandon Carlson. So let's just go out there and kind of let the chips fall where they may. Now, this upcoming semifinal, though, they have to play Indiana State. Mm-hmm. And Indiana State is 80 miles away in terms of its locations.
Right.
So
basically a home game.
Yeah. It's not gonna be your traditional neutral site because it's literally in the same state as the Sycamores. But this is a fun opportunity for Utah to go and, I think, finish the season on a high note.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Before we dig into Indiana State that much, there's really only one thing I think people need to know about. Robbie Avila. Do you know who Robbie Avila is? Their big man?
Okay.
Okay, so Michelle, he is a sensation. He's Mexican-American, really, really fun player. Think of like a, I don't know, well, I guess the best comparison is probably BYU's Ali Khalifa.
Okay.
Just a big, supersized playmaker. He's the star of the Sycamores. Now, he's got an incredible list of nicknames, Michelle. Some incredible nicknames.
Oh, you know what? We were talking. Okay. Yeah, I'm following now. Yes, we were talking about him in the press conference room.
Let me run down some of these nicknames. I want to hear your thoughts on these. So first one, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
That was a good one.
Larry Nerd, because he wears glasses.
Yeah.
And Larry Bird played for Indiana State.
Right.
Steph Blurry. Or Milk Chamberlain.
Oh, my gosh. People.
Is there one that you like more than the others?
I mean, I think the Larry Nerd one's pretty funny.
It's pretty good. I'm a big fan of the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar one.
That one's good, too.
All of them are awesome, though. But this kid, he is really, really good. He's 20 years old. He wears literally sport
the goggles. Yeah,
like when he's playing. But this is going to be fun because he has become this sensation. Home Field Apparel, you know, the t-shirt company, they've actually created a whole shirt for him.
I think he's got an
NIL deal. They did a whole Indiana State run now because of the run that Indiana State is on here in the NIT.
Oh, that's fun.
Indiana State probably should have been in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
They kind of got hosed in that regard. So this is a really, really good team mm-hmm. that Utah's going up against. And the fact that you have a viral sensation on the other sideline, that should add, I think, a little bit of the overall feel for this game.
Well, yeah. And again, when you take into consideration what Davon Smith's done, like got some newsworthy guys mm-hmm. going against each other. Yeah, I think that sets up for, you know, a fun matchup. I think this is going to be one of Utah's biggest tests. It feels like they figured some things out that mm-hmm. that were not working earlier in the season. And it's, you know, I think people are sitting there going, man, like if you could have just figured this out and been this team, you know, for a couple games on the road. And again, we're going to see, it, does this actually translate to the road, or was this just more kind of that Huntsman magic where they're a beautiful glass carriage at the Huntsman Center, and then they turn into a pumpkin wherever else they go. I'm curious to see how this goes. Again, it feels like there's maybe a different attitude mm-hmm. about them. Does that translate to wins on the road and maybe an NIT championship? I don't know. We'll definitely see.
And simply put, you have to at this point.
Yeah.
There are no more home games.
Right, like, yeah.
You had, the final farewell for Brendan Carlson. Mm-hmm. You obviously had the senior night thing. It was TBD on, but it's done.
Yeah.
The Huntsman Center magic,
it
were, it's over. So
it's do or die now.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to this. I think it's a big opportunity for Utah, as I said. Like, go out there and just win. Keep winning. Because guess what? That gives you, in terms of us in the media, we're going to cover you.
Mm-hmm.
Because guess what? You keep winning, you're the storylines. We're following stories.
Mm-hmm.
We are storytellers. That's what we are. So mm-hmm. Utah keeps doing their thing, and we'll see how it goes. I'm looking forward to it. And and by the way, a note on Davon Smith. When you break a record that Jason Kidd held,
I know.
Props to you, sir.
Their 30-year-old record broken, and it's yours forever.
Well, I was going to say that.
it's now yours forever. No one's breaking that record.
Yeah. So Davon Smith, he's been a sensation all season long. It's really cool to see that storyline in of itself. And for those of you who don't know, it's the single season triple-double mark in Pac-12 history. Jason Kidd had 4 his final season at Cal, and Davon Smith has got 5 on the season, and there is still time to add 1 or 2 more.
I mean, he's and I found that very funny and kind of ironic that the NCAA holder for that record is, of course, BYU's
Kyle Collinsworth.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And he needs one more to tie that, and he needs one more to break that. And Utah possibly has two games to do that.
Well, let's put it this way. If he tallies triple doubles in both of those games, I'm going to guess they probably win. Trust me, Russell Westbrook has made a career of making triple doubles, like making mash out of potato. Like, just.
Yeah.
That's an opportunity for him to go out there and do something impressive. Now, there's one other note on the Utah front that I want to address with you, is that Raleigh Wooster is already in the NCAA transfer portal. Curious timing in a way, just with the season still going here,
mm-hmm.
but with Raleigh still being sidelined due to injury, and I don't know if you have an update on that, but it seems like his season's over for all intents and purposes, and he's maybe just trying to get a jump on where he's going to play next. But it's a bit stunning to me that Raleigh, a guy who came with Craig Smith from Utah State, has opted to enter the transfer portal, but I guess you just kind of wish him the best and hope he finds a good spot for himself.
You know, I think what that ultimately kind of indicates mm-hmm. is that Davon's staying, and that could change. That could obviously change. And
we've all seen there's rumors out there.
Yeah, there's rumors. And I mean, for good, like, people are going to go after him. They're not going to go after him.
Hold on. You can notch triple doubles at a power 6 level. Hey, we've got this bag of money over here that has your name on it. Guess what, folks? Tampering is happening.
Mm-hmm.
No matter, you can bury your head in the sand and say it's not. No, it's actually absolutely happening. But continue,
absolutely
please.
Happening. The impression I've been getting from conversations is Utah feels like they can keep him, they can retain him. He's kind of goal number one, and I think he appreciates the time he's had at Utah. I don't think he's really actively looking to leave. I think he knows he has a good situation there. Again, obviously things can change, and they can change on a moment's notice. Everybody has their price, you know. but for the here and now, that's my understanding, and that would obviously explain, I think, why Raleigh made the jump. You know, he's started for Utah. He's been their starting guy, and I don't blame him for not wanting to be the bench guy for Davon. Like, I get that. So I think that's kind of here and why we're hearing what we're hearing. Again, subject to change.
sure.
But for the here and now, that's kind of my understanding. That's my impression. And we'll kind of see how that goes.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see, yeah, ultimately where things shake out on that front. But let's also be real. This is the day and age of college hoops. I think we're north of 1,000 athletes in the portal already, which, and I was talking with DJ and PK yesterday, and DJ's like, well, where do you think this ends up? I'm like, 2,000, 3,000 kids. It's just, it's incredible how many guys are going to enter the portal. Now, there are a lot of guys who they're entering the portal hopeful of another shot that won't get that shot. So that's the risk you run. A guy like Raleigh Wooster, I'm not concerned about him not getting another shot. He will land somewhere. He easily, being a kid from Montana, he easily could find himself back at Montana or Montana State potentially. He could be in the Big Sky. And he'll find a spot. So, and let's also acknowledge the fact that this is just how reality is. Yeah. I'll go down to BYU. Marcus Adams?
Yeah.
Michelle? In a calendar year, Marcus Adams is going to have committed and or signed with 4 different programs. 4.
Right.
Insanity.
Yeah, he's moved
around
a little.
He signed with Kansas, announced before the season even started, he was transferring to Gonzaga. Now he got up to Spokane and whatever went down. Then announced he's going to BYU, has spent the entire season on the bench for BYU due to some injury concerns. That was the biggest thing, and conditioning was also a factor for him. I will never say this is something that should be held against him. His father passes away.
Right, right. Yeah, he's had a tough time.
And he's announced that he is entering the transfer portal once again, and the reports are that he wants to go closer to home. His mom's in Southern California. His brother is a prep star down there as well, just like Marcus was. He was a 4-star prospect. You wish him well. But that's the reality in this day and age of college basketball. You're going to have guys enter the portal for whatever reason, and in all honesty, you just say, hey, thank you for what you did, and now you turn your attention to go and find another guy. Trust me, I'm seeing every day that Utah and BYU have contacted this guy over here and that guy over there. And Mason Falslev, who is a Cache County born and raised kid, breakout season with Utah State. Guess who's in the portal?
Yeah.
Mason Falslev, who, by the way, originally signed with Utah, then went back to Utah State after his mission. Where does he end up?
Right.
It's crazy what is going on right now, but it's the new reality, and especially in college basketball.
Yeah, it's very easy to move around in college basketball.
Well,
they
suspended the transfer. You can transfer as many times as you want now.
Exactly, and that I know some people are probably, Davon would transfer again. Well, yeah, he's open to at this point in time if he wants to, needs to.
One word, money.
Money.
Yeah.
Money. It's going to be interesting to see what ultimately transpires. I know Utah feels good about that situation right now. That could easily change. So we'll see what happens.
It is crazy out there. There's just the thing about it is it's never going to, and it's not going to slow down. That's the thing about this. I was, who were we talking to earlier this week? Talking about like revamping things, and it's like, here's the deal. That toothpaste is not going back in that tube ever.
We screwed it up royally. We screwed it up royally, and it is what it is.
Yeah, it's wild, wild times, but hey, it's fun to have Utah doing their thing. It's obviously going to be, it's going to have an outsized audience here locally because here's the thing. When the rivals get together, they watch each other's games and they love to talk about it. So there will be BYU fans, quote unquote, hate watching Utah on Tuesday. Michelle,
it does happen. I know it happens.
Absolutely a thing. And we'll see how it goes. Now, going up against a guy like Robbie Avila, a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Larry Nerd or however you want. And by the way, I also saw one other one. They've kind of mixed the Steph blurred and the Larry blurred as well. So kind of interchange that one. He's a sensation, and we'll see. This ISU team, Indiana State, they are very, very good. And they're going to be a pretty stiff test, especially the fact that, they're 80 miles from their campus, whereas Utah, you got to make a plane ride all the way to Indianapolis. So, looking forward to it, and we'll obviously have plenty of coverage on that coming up this week throughout all the shows here on the KSL Sports Zone. All right, we'll come back on the other side. We'll dive in to some college football. I want to talk spring camp with you.
Okay.
We'll talk We'll talk BYU. We'll dig into that next. This is the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jay Catch, Michelle Bodkin along for the ride here on this Saturday. Hope you all are doing well out there. Crazily enough, Michelle, we're at the end of March.
I know.
It's one of those sports months that just flies. I mean, flies.
There's
by.
A lot. Like, I always forget, and then I always remember. And again, it's maybe a little bit of a unique situation for Utah because they have four sports kind of going on at once, yeah. Like big sports that people care mm-hmm. about. Yeah. At some point in time, some of those might not need as much coverage. But for the here and now, everybody's kind of doing well and the coverage is demanded. So it's a busy month. It's actually in some ways way busier than football season.
Yeah, it's absolutely nuts. But let's talk some spring football. That's one of the things that's happening in the month of March, typically. Now, BYU is wrapping up shop today, crazily enough. They've done a month's worth of practices, so stay tuned to KSLSports.com and our station here. Obviously, we'll have plenty of coverage on that. Let's start off with the Cougars for a moment here, Michelle.
Okay.
And the biggest thing is that BYU and that quarterback battle continues to just be, it's back and forth. Jake
okay.
Retzlaff, Gary Bohannon. And we've been out there, we've essentially been able to watch 15, 20 minutes each practice. The media availability has been happening, and that's been usually twice a week out of the three practices they scheduled. So we've seen a grand total of, if you total that up, like an hour and a half of football of practices from BYU. And I'll tell you, with my own amateur eyes, there is no clear favorite in that battle. Now, is that good? Is that bad? That remains to be determined. But it feels like it is very much a two-man race that will continue on into the summer and obviously into training camp once August rolls around. Give me your sense, because you've tracked some of these quarterback battles for Utah over the years, and Utah's biggest conversation on the quarterback front is the backup for the number two job, where you've got a guy like Brandon Rose, who's been in the program for a while, trying to fend off this up-and-coming
hot freshman.
In Isaac Wilson. But give me your sense for where you think things stand with regards to spring football and just quarterback battles as a result of those.
And sorry, Claire, do you want me to talk about
BYU's
end?
BYU side of things, just from and
okay.
kind of using the prism of you having covered it at Utah.
Okay, you know, I think very early on in Utah's Pac-12 transition, going from being a Mountain West darling to, you know, a P5 type program, Utah had very similar type battles, right? Mm-hmm. Where they had a couple of guys that were very evenly matched. And at least from Utah's perspective, how that kind of transpired is nobody was really exactly what they needed for the job. So it wasn't helpful and it didn't matter too much. Like, they still needed to upgrade and do better in that position group. And you know, hindsight, looking back at that, it wasn't that they had two great guys to choose from. It was you had two kind of okay guys. And, you know, it just was something that you needed to work on. Now, the interesting thing is, transfer portal changes that a little
bit.
It's a little bit easier to get, I think, better talent in. So does that mean the same thing for this BYU team? I don't really know, because it's a little bit of a different animal than it was when Utah was trying to do this. But if we're asking opinion from experience... That's what I got for you.
Okay.
With the knowledge that, again, it is a bit of a different animal. Does it work a little bit differently in this case? I don't know.
Well, it's valid, though. That's the thing about this. You mentioned the transfer portal that's shaking things up. That's why Gary Bohannon is in Provo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's because of the transfer portal. Like, you go back to when Utah was kind of talking about, like, their earlier years of their Pac-12 run. That wouldn't have ever happened.
No.
Like, it'd been like, oh, yeah, that's not – so. It's an interesting circumstance. I do wonder how things are going to shake out on that front. But the thing about it is, Fessy Sitake, so he's BYU's wide receivers coach. He's also the passing game coordinator, Michelle. Jay Drew asked him, he's like, hey, where does this wide receiver core for you shake up in your entire run at BYU? Remember, the Fessy's been with Kalani since day one.
Yeah.
Like 8 years plus now. And Fessy said, this is the best I've had in my time at BYU. they go, and I'll conservatively say six deep, Michelle, of guys that contributed last year. And they brought back everybody that was a wide receiver of note last year. That's the crazy thing about this. And by the way, a guy that they thought might get aced out a little bit, they moved to tight end in Keanu Hill.
I mean, Utah's done that before, too, yeah. And it usually works well. And again, we're talking kind of the same coaching tree. Yeah. Like, so
yes. Well, if you want to talk about the coaching tree, Michelle.
Yeah.
Gary Anderson's wearing BYU blue.
I know. It's so wild.
I've seen him like 10 times during spring camp, and he's wearing BYU gear, and I still kind of shake my head.
There's no register.
Like, but Jay Hill's wearing blue. Kaha is wearing blue.
It's crazy. We recycle a lot around here. Let's just say
that.
We do.
Yeah.
So some of the hate's a little bit crazy because of that, but whatever. Anyway, I think they have a good gauge of, you know, will this, won't this work?
Sure.
Because everybody's kind of come through the same system, mm-hmm. and they know what to look for. They know what to do. So that's an interesting move. Curious to see how that goes. I suspect probably ultimately going to be a good move for him. And I will say, if you don't have a real great quarterback, like, and here's the thing, I think BYU only needs an average quarterback, and especially if this wide receiver room is as good as Fessy is saying,
get the ball into their hands, good receivers,
yeah. A good running back, a good offensive line can hide a lot of quarterback flaws, just like a really good quarterback can hide a lot of flaws in those other realms. Mm-hmm. You kind of need one or the other. If both are not good, you're not going to be good.
And that's kind of the storyline of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Offensive line struggled. Quarterback play was inconsistent. Running game was near non-existent for 10 games of the season. And guess what? BYU slumped to a 5-7 record. They lost five straight to end the season. Like, brutal aspects of that season that you're absolutely right about. If that wide receiving core is as good as it's cracked up to be, and I believe it is, by the way, people I've talked to down there, they rave about Darius Lassiter.
Okay.
A lot of people talk about Cody Epps and Chase Roberts, and by the way, they're both fantastic.
I mean, they're knowns, right? We're a little more familiar with them.
But
yeah.
Darius Lassiter had some incredible moments last year. But I'm telling you, people that are inside that program have told me, Jake, he's the guy.
Okay. Let's go.
And if he ends up becoming your alpha wide receiver, guess what? You've got five, six other guys. And oh, by the way, there's this guy, remember Cody Hagan from Corner Canyon?
Mm-hmm.
Comes home off of a mission this spring, and he'll be joining that room. So there's a lot of talent there, and you're right. You maybe not have Jaren Hall or a Zach Wilson type level of quarterback play this season for BYU, but guess what? If you can get a guy who simply understands that, hey, I've got a guy like Keanu Hill who is, by the way, looking really good at tight end. Get him the ball at tight end.
Right.
Get the ball out to these wide receivers. Get the ball in the hands of LJ Martin, your star running back, who appears to be the star. Get the ball into the hands of your playmakers and let them make you look good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can hide a lot of flaws that way. So I think that's a good strategy for BYU.
Yeah.
If you're a little bit unsure about the quarterbacks, just tell them, trust the people that we do know are stars, and it'll work out. So that's what I would do. And that's kind of another, I think, difference between BYU and Utah in their transitions. Utah didn't exactly have the best wide receiver group. They had some really great running backs.
Well, let's be real. It's kind of been a weak spot for 12 seasons.
For forever and ever and ever.
It's nothing against Kalen Clay and Kenneth Scott.
They've had
a guy.
Yeah, they've had like a guy here and there, but not like enough to really, like I said, kind of hide some flaws.
Correct.
Whereas it sounds like BYU has a pretty complete wide receiver room that, as long as their guys trust those guys, mm-hmm. it will be fine. And I would also add the offensive line needs to be better, because like, you need time to get the ball to those guys.
Sure. Yeah.
If those three things work, I think they're in decent enough shape.
Well, and trust me, they're banking on the offensive line having a rebound year. That's been actually the emphasis that Aaron Roderick has talked about multiple times on the record. He said, we're getting back. We want to run the football better. We need to be the team that we were in 2020, 2021, when Tyler Allgeier was running wild on people. LJ Martin looks the part of a kind of next star running back for BYU. Well, guess what? He ain't going to do anything without anybody in front of him blocking for him. Yeah. You've got Connor Pay. You got Waylon Lapuaho. You got Braden Keim, who are three starters from last year coming back. So you got a good core to build around there. Now, can you get them back to the level that they were at? I think the hire of TJ Woods, people are really, really high on him. He is kind of that butt kicker type. Like, he will rip into guys when they, and that's something they were lacking the last 2 years with the offensive line. So we'll see. It's interesting. Now, I don't want to spend all the time of this segment on BYU, so I want to flip over and talk Utah for a minute here, but actually kind of more on the offensive line is a good point to start on, because Utah loses a lot from that offensive front. Now, you're protecting Cam Rising, obviously. You got to keep him healthy. Like, come on. Bad Moon is the storyline for Utah this spring.
Yes.
But you got to have the guys in front of him. So give me your sense from being up there at Utah. How are things overall for the offense progressing as they try and use what Cam Rising can do to have what I would expect is a pretty good year one in the Big 12?
Yeah. You know, it sounds like it's going well. I think they've figured out they're five guys, and I think the most interesting move of all was moving over, I always want to get the names wrong, Spencer Fano to right tackle, and then moving Caleb Wamu up to left tackle.
Both of which, by the way, were true freshmen last year who got time.
So I think that's probably the most interesting move, is just kind of moving Spencer to the other side of the line and bringing in Caleb. And then, you know, as far as the rest of it goes, there was one practice where the snaps were not great from anybody playing center. Yeah.
That can scuttle a play faster than anything.
Oh, totally. It sounds like that's been cleaned up. It sounds like that was just, for whatever reason, a bad day. But not a consistent pattern. So that's good. But, you know, we'll see how the rest of it kind of shapes up. And then Utah and Jim Harding is always, you know, kind of harping on, it's not even just the first five guys. We want 8 or 9 or 10 guys.
As every program should aspire to
that we feel comfortable, you know, if someone gets injured or needs a break, we can slide you in and there's not going to be any issue. So, you know, they're just kind of working through that process. I think they have the talent. I think they have the guys to be able to do that. It's just getting the reps, getting comfortable. Because, again, this is a room more than anyone else except for perhaps the defensive line, where you have to work together. Like, you have to work. If you're all doing different things, it's not going to go well.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the bigger point is, yes, the offensive line and just the offense in general, you got to work in sync. You got to be in. We talk all the time, and coaches use it all the time. It's coach speak. I get it. Every guy has to do their job. Anybody who's watched football at any level knows that if you have one, maybe two guys screw up on any given play, guess what? A bad snap, a bobble of a handoff, a wide receiver running the run.
It throws everything up.
A block missed on the offensive line or blocks missed. And it's so they're not wrong when they say everyone's going to do their job. But that's where it comes together. That's where spring's kind of this period where you try new things out. Spencer Fano to right tackle. Caleb Omu, he moves to left tackle. You're trying to get a feel for that. Try new guys at center to see, okay, who is the most consistent snapping the football? Okay, what are we, in Utah's case, who's going to be the number two quarterback? Brandon Rose, what do you look like out there as you come back from injury? Isaac Wilson, are you ready to roll, even though you still need a surgery, allegedly, which is crazy to
me.
I know, but,
yeah. Hey, that story's nuts.
But then even for both of these programs, you know, BYU and Utah, there's plenty of stuff on the defense. Utah's replacing essentially their entire secondary.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of pieces there. Let's be clear. They got
they got guys.
It's Teo, right? It's not Talis.
Teo
Johnson looks the part of the next great safety for Utah, if you believe the reports. Alakai Gilman looks like he could be in the mix as a transfer over from Stanford. And then down at BYU, well, they only had, I think, like 15 safeties play last year. I'm just talking about safety positions as examples here. Trust me. I'm telling you, BYU, I think, went 8 deep last year due to injury at safety.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of storylines with these teams, and I also will caution everybody. I probably should have started today's segment talking about this. Spring football, take all of it. I mean, all of it.
With a little grain of salt.
And understand that.
Or a boulder of salt. Yeah. It's fine. Whatever.
Because there's a lot of smoke and mirrors, for lack of a better term, out there, because they're trying new things. Mm-hmm. They're trying plays out that they will never run in a game and they will never run in practice ever again, just to see, hey,
what happens.
Did that work? And if it works, by the way, the coaches are like, well, check mark, we'll add that one to the playbook.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just cross it out and say,
never again.
Yeah, so it's,
never again.
It's a period for experimentation. It's just what it is. But at the same time, there is development occurring that is going to be critical. And we're talking about BYU and Utah in this case. It's critical to both these programs' success.
Yes.
The expectation levels for the two of them are going to be very, very different. Mm-hmm. BYU, I think expectation levels, get back to the postseason. Find a way to get to six wins. Utah, on the other hand, can you go in and win the Big 12 year one?
Playoff or bust.
It feels that way.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure, especially coming off of a season like last year where there were so many injuries, which again, ironic enough, mathematically, everyone knew they were not at that point, but mathematically speaking, mm-hmm. they were still in the run for the Pac-12 title in November.
And that's a credit to Kyle Whittingham
crazy.
And his staff. And,
crazy.
And all the players in the program, to have hung in there like they did. Massive tip of the cap to all of them. Because, trust me, you know this as well as anybody. You were covering it every day. Is the injuries. And if this was an NFL model where they actually had to release an injury report.
Yeah.
Utah's would have covered, I think, 3 pages.
I think Porter Larson did the math, and he said 38 guys.
Wow. Okay.
38 guys for Utah were
lost time due to injury.
Uh-huh.
My goodness.
Yeah.
It's wild, but so I guess the original point to be made here is that it is spring. Mm-hmm. It is time for guys to show out and to come along. And BYU's case, I think Cougar fans are just watching this okay, we really have a quarterback. I get all of that, but understand that it gets real in August.
Yeah.
Right now, it's about skill development. It's about finding out, okay, and I think in the case of BYU, just going back to them real quick with the quarterback thing, I think they'll have an idea of who the leader in the clubhouse is mm-hmm. After spring, as wraps up to here, but they're not going to come out and say, hey, Jake's our guy or Gary's our guy. That's just not how they're going to operate, because guess what? If that were to happen, guess what Jake Retzloff, for example, could do? Hey, there's this thing called the transfer portal.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah.
So.
I think there's a little bit of strategy too as far as opponents mm-hmm. until you have to reveal who it is, and Whittingham's notoriously done this for years and years and years. Obviously when he has his guy, you know who the guy is. Mm-hmm. When they've settled on Tyler Huntley, you know that Tyler Huntley's going to be the guy. Cam Rising's going to be the guy. But when there's a battle for that number one spot and nobody knows, oh, he plays it up like nobody's business. Prepare for all my guys, so it's, there's a bit of strategy there as well.
Yep. All right. We will see how it all shakes out. We'll have plenty of coverage still. Like I mentioned, it rolls on. Utah spring, the 22 forever game is April 13th.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes. So we still got another week-ish.
And change. Yeah.
So of this left.
We'll have plenty of coverage still to come, obviously, and we've been doing these updates on air throughout the other shows on The Zone as well. So we'll have plenty of spring football for you guys in the coming days and weeks. All right, coming up next, we'll round out hour one of the program. We'll get to technical fouls. That's next right here on The Saturday Show.
If you're coming from the street with dirty shoes on your feet, that's a technical foul. If you switch the radio to some modern music show, that's a technical foul. If you touch the thermostat,
you'll get hit with a bat.
Cause that's a technical foul.
You will feel my wrath.
That's a technical foul.
Personal foul, 69, offense. He was giving them the business.
A technical foul.
As you heard, it is time now for technical fouls, where we have a little bit of fun and, talk about the more frivolous side of sports and kind of the downright stupid at times. But, Michelle, do you remember, this goes back, I think, 2 weeks ago, that when we talked about the bobbleheads for Jaromir Jagr disappearing?
Yes, yes, yes.
Did you see the update on this, by the way?
Have they found them?
They found them.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so, the Athletic did an incredible story on this, by the way. And so, we're just talking about the stupid things and people being stupid. But this has a cool, funny story ending to it. So, they got stolen, obviously. They were on a semi-truck, and they assumed that thieves had just taken them. Michelle, counterfeit the thieves took counterfeit documents to the warehouse they originally stored in when they got to California, where they came over from Hong Kong.
Oh my
And essentially took them. So they didn't even, it wasn't that the trucking company lost them and they got stolen that way. Thieves literally drove up to the warehouse, had counterfeit documents, and drove off with them.
Oh, my gosh.
So then they had a bunch of false alarms, apparently, and couldn't find them and everything. And all of a sudden, they finally got a call. Long after returning home, the story was, extortionists reached out and may have been delivering to a warehouse in California, so in terms of an update. And so they get a call. The baubles have been located in Ontario. Now, you're thinking Ontario, Canada? How in the world did Pittsburgh Penguin bobbleheads get to Ontario? They're not Ontario, Canada.
California?
Ontario, California.
Oh, my gosh. No!
One of the quotes in the story from one of the people in the story. I didn't even know there was an Ontario, California. Well, here's the thing. Ontario, California is not far away from the port where they came in on. But they found them, so they have recovered the Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads. They're going to be obviously handing them out to the fans who went to that game they had originally set them for. They handed out a ticket.
Right. Yeah,
you can
a voucher
it for this, because they were going to have them redo them if they couldn't find them. But they found them in Ontario, California. They are now safe and sound. So,
that's so funny.
All's well that ends
And wait,
well.
The article said that they didn't know Ontario,
One of the people quoted in this article who
didn't
was part
know.
Of this didn't know that there was an Ontario, California.
Oh, my gosh.
They're not from California if they were.
The only reason I know that is because Kenneth Scott is from Ontario, California. And there's an airport, too.
Yeah,
exactly. Pretty, like, substantial airport.
I'm also married into a Orange County family.
You know as well.
Yeah, so it's just kind of funny how that all worked out. But hey, congratulations. I'm glad they figured it out, but all the same. All right, Michelle, what do you got for us this week?
So mine is unfortunately a little more serious. And I know we're going to dive into it a little bit more, but I'm giving my technical foul to Gonzaga and the NCAA. I understand that you didn't have the space to put people up, but really, like, you send everybody to a place that's notorious for racial issues when you're talking about teams that tend to be very diverse. Basketball teams tend to have a whole span of different types of people on those rosters. It's not like you're talking about a swim team where, it's probably going to be a bunch of white dudes across the board. So I just think that was incredibly naive, and I can't imagine that there weren't other places you could have explored with less of a reputation.
Well, Kate, Michelle, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho is, 35 minutes away by bus is what they were saying?
Yeah.
You can't find a hotel anywhere closer than that? Come on. You're right. The reputation of Northern Idaho speaks for itself.
It's not good.
They have a long, and I mean long, history with hate groups. It made my skin crawl to hear about this, because it's just like, what is going on? But at the same time, that's a massive technical foul on Gonzaga, first off. And yes, I understand that they already had the NCAA men's basketball tournament in town. I get all that. But Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, Lewiston, Idaho is not that far away. It's literally like a 5-minute drive across the border. Like, you couldn't find a hotel anywhere?
I don't know. And I feel bad saying that because, to be honest, Gonzaga University was so welcoming. Okay. The people were so nice.
Okay, NCAA should actually foot the, I guess, more of the blame. But
I mean, you guys live in this area. You guys know, like, you hear the stories way more than anybody else. And that's still where you chose to dump people off?
Yeah, it's a bad look. It's a bad deal, and had a sad ending to it all. Like, just, you're just like, why? Why would you guys do that? But yet again, we are taught that people will just sometimes take the path of least resistance, I guess, in a way.
I guess.
And that's the tough part to absorb about it, is because it had a really, really unfortunate outcome as a result of all of it. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's no perfect answer for it, but that it feels like that one could have been avoided.
It could have and should have been avoided.
Just that one just seems like this one. There was a pretty, and I say simple solution. Well, the simple solution is,
we're not going to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Yeah.
We're not doing, like, we're just, we'll find something else.
Right.
So, I don't know. By the way, can I just insert one other fun one real quick?
Oh, yeah, go for it, go for it. Let's end on a happier note before we probably dive back into that issue.
You know, Steve Belichick, Bill Belichick's son, was on his staff with the New England Patriots. Well, he is now the defensive coordinator for the Washington Huskies. And he's speaking to the media earlier this week, Michelle. And what a quip he had here. So he was asked during a press conference Wednesday of this week what some differences between him and Bill Belichick, his father, were. Now, this is like sticking a knife right between the ribs. I got a job and he doesn't. Period. End of sentence.
Oh, it sounds like he has the same type of relationship that I have with my parents, because I could like say something like that, and or they would say something like that about me. But wow.
Yep. So. Okay, Steve Belichick, that's pretty good jab there.
I'm impressed. It's someone that likes, you know, a little bit of that snarky sarcasm. Yeah. Two thumbs up. Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah. So if Steve can keep this up, we will probably be hearing better quotes from him than his father has given in recent memory. Because
no kidding.
We're on to New Orleans or all this stuff from Steve. It's like, okay, stop it. But nonetheless. All right. So, yeah. Way to go, Steve Belichick. That was hilarious. Awesome. All right. Coming up here in just a moment, we'll flip back over, get back into some of the other topics we've not had a chance to touch on quite yet. We've got a lot to cover. Still ahead right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.